Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Oh, Winnie, meet Deputy Dewey.
Winnie, it's a cat. Oh,
oh no! Sarah, I'll tell you right up top, you are kind of like a bucket list guest for Ladies Night. So I am very excited to have you on the show.
Well, I'm
welcome.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
I'm especially glad to be doing this for Run because I think that set visit might have been the coldest one I've ever been on, but also the most fulfilling in the end, because when you get to see something through to the end like that, and especially beyond the set of a smaller production, I feel like we don't get that experience often enough here.
Yes, I think that's the only thing I know about is that it was the coldest place I have ever been while pretending it was spring, you know?
Yeah, I honestly can't even imagine how you did that.
That's where it gets a little like the real, that's where they're really paying you the money for the acting. Like, pretend you're warm. Pretend you're warm. You can't feel
job your- well done in that department. All right. I warned you. We go back to the beginning, and I mean the very, very beginning with this. My first question for you is, what shows and movies were you watching when you were really young? And do you find that any of them have influenced the roles that you tend to gravitate towards now?
I really loved Growing Pains. I really loved the movie Annie. It's not very sophisticated stuff. I really love The Facts of Life.
Some solid choices right there.
I really loved Different Strokes. I really loved All in the Family.
I'm not seeing many sitcoms on your resume now, though.
No, so there you go. What I will tell you is that I had very, very young parents. They were 21 and 23 or 22, depending on, my dad doesn't always, I'm not quite sure how old my dad even is. They were young parents, and my dad particularly liked watching scary movies. So we watched a lot of Friday the 13th movies, the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, Psycho, all kinds of things that I think from a very young age imprinted me with a kind of terror that no young child should really honestly live with. So it is sort of interesting that those were the movies that my dad liked to watch when we were with him. And it was pretty, pretty scary over there. And yet here I find myself.
Now that's a very clear connection that I could see. Yeah. So you came out of the womb wanting to act, but I know it's a completely different story saying I want to be an actor versus I believe I can be an actor. So do you remember when that switch happened for you?
I remember sitting on the jungle gym at my school in Park Slope. I was in the sixth grade. Maybe I was about to be in the seventh grade. And I had a teacher named Robert Stallworth, who was the acting teacher at this middle school I was going to. And he said, you know, I don't know if you know this, but you can go to a high school. It's a specialized high school where you could take acting classes as part of your curriculum, you know, along with your English and your math classes. And I was like, I remember like swinging my feet and being like, what do you mean? And he said, well, I think you maybe, you know, when I was a kid, I'm sure I didn't know, you know, I knew nothing about anything. I still don't. I think a lot about acting is so mysterious. But he just was the first person to introduce it to me as something that could be a profession, and that I could study to learn more about it. And it didn't just have to be a pastime or something that I was casually interested in. I think he could tell that I was more than casually interested in it. And so I auditioned for what is known sort of formally now as LaGuardia High School, but it had been music and art and performing arts. And it probably changed when I auditioned for that school and I was accepted. And it was such a, you know, I think 3,000 kids auditioned for the drama department the year that I was entering, and 60 kids are accepted. So it's a very, and I don't know how much of what those numbers, if they remain that way or not, but it was a very competitive, you know, and I had a lot of friends who were, you know, trying to get into Stuyvesant and, you know, these other schools that were specialized schools. And I got into to this high school, and it was the first moment where I thought, oh, I can actually pursue this as a profession. And it was probably the moment I went from being a person who only wanted to see plays and only go to the movies. And that was what my mother would do for me on my birthdays, was she would take me to see a play. And I don't know that there were a ton of kids who wanted to do that at 11, 12, 13, 14, before I went even into that high school and knew that that was something. But that was what I was interested in, was going to.
So you go to that school, and correct me if I'm wrong here, if my timelines are off, but I believe that after you graduated from there, you got work on screen and also on stage. Correct. So was there ever, did you always know that you wanted a balance at that point? Or no. Was there ever anyone that encouraged you to focus on one or the other?
No, I was a child. You know, I was unformed in a lot of ways, and still am, I hope, because that means there's possibility for continuing to change and shift. But I didn't know what was possible. The idea of career, the idea of life outside my little bubble, you know, that teenagery, this is all there is bubble. I didn't know that there was such a thing as striking a balance. I just thought of an acting job in New York on Broadway, understudying Amy Ryan was my first job, along with an episode of Law and Order where my character was the main story for that episode. And it's a rite of passage in New York, the original Law and Order. There's like a whole group of us. You know, you can go back and see people, you know, that show's been on how many years now? I mean, you can see all kinds of the beginnings of all kinds of careers. You know, that was when I didn't know I could turn my head on camera. I think I've told this story before where I didn't know that I could, I thought I would move like I was in some kind of brace, because I didn't realize the camera could move with me. And, you know, it's not the kind of thing I learned at school. And I did not go to a conservatory after high school, because I did start working, which was a surprise to me. And I think a real shock to my mother that I was actually going to pursue this.
I was in love with him. I did what he told me. We cleaned up the blood. And Steve took Mom away.
It's the right pair of eyes watching you, sort of can determine whether or not you have a successful career or not. What I mean by that is that on Law and Order, I went to audition for Lynn Kressel, who was casting all the things at that time in New York. And I went to audition for Law and Order. I got a call back. I went then to the producer session, which was down where Law and Order was shooting, some other place. And I went in with Ed Sheeran, and I can't remember, Constantine something, I can't remember his last name. He had been the DP, I think, or one of the ADs, and he was directing this episode. And Ed Sheeran is married to Jane Alexander. He's just this wonderful director, producer, but I did my audition, and in the audition, I was supposed to cry. It was like, because in this episode, I was going to have to cry a lot. And there's a something you can find for connectivity for the rest of my working life thus far. I'm dying to do a comedy. I promise I can be funny. But I remember doing the audition, and I did it. And I sort of looked up at him, and I'm all of 19. And he went, I think you're feeling something right now that if you allowed yourself to feel it would be exactly what you would need to do in the scene. Are you feeling embarrassed? Because I didn't cry at all the whole scene. I couldn't cry because I was nervous, or I didn't know. He 100% knew that I felt humiliated and embarrassed. And he just said, do you feel that way? And I said, yes. And I started to cry. And he said, go read the scene now. And I did, and I got the part. But that is that, much like, you know, the Ryan Murphy stories of later, that's the difference between an actor who gets to work a lot and a person who doesn't. For whatever reason, Ed Sheeran took that extra moment with me, didn't let me leave the room, and just said, who knows what, I mean, I could, to this day, could ask him what made him do that. Maybe it was total, you know, luck. Maybe there was something he saw that I don't, you know, but he's why I got that job, which then allowed me to, you know, continue to pursue the career because I was able to make a living and getting some communication that it was the right choice. And, you know, it's these little tiny moments where you just go, God, what would have happened to me if he hadn't done that?
That makes me think about something that you brought up like a while back. I was talking to you about Carol and you made a comment about the nature of auditions now and not preferring a taped audition. Do you think that opportunities like that and interactions like that in the audition space are kind of, I don't know, are they at risk of evaporating because we are shifting so much towards tapes and Zoom auditions?
Yes. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I of course, the last thing I auditioned for was The Goldfinch, which was the bomb heard around the world, but I don't care. I loved making it and it was my favorite book and that I'd read in a while. And I wanted to work with all those actors and that director. And I had to fight really hard to get him to even see me. It's like the girl who played Marcia Clark can't play Xandra in this. I can't. So my only reason of bringing that up is that I don't have a ton of experience in the last few years of the audition thing in terms of the value of it. I now have that thing and being in the executive producerial space sometimes where I get, you know, get to look at auditions. And what ends up happening is instead of giving a note in a room to an actor and having an opportunity to see what an actor does with the thing you've communicated to them, how do they use it? Because I guess Ed Sheeran could have said to me, I think you're feeling humiliated. And I could have gone, no, I'm not. I could have hidden myself self-protectively, and then I wouldn't have gotten, but instead I was open to it. And that's what he needed to see is like, could I go there if asked, you know? And so this is that thing where in these other auditions, what they'll do is they'll give an actor a note after the tapes have all been watched by the producer. And then they give them a note through their agent and then they retape with the note. And I do think it takes away some of the magic that can happen in a room. It just, there is something, there is alchemy, there is synergistic energy that happens in a room with, when you're reading with another actor, as opposed to a casting director who reads everything very flatly. Acting is about listening and responding. And you can imagine somebody listening and responding to you in a particular way, but it's much easier if you have a person really doing it. So, you know, yes, I think we are at risk of so many things because of technology. And also we stand to gain so much from technology, but we are able to continue to do this kind of thing because of technology, you know?
Very true. And I'm very grateful for that right now. Going back to some of your early TV experience, of all the series that you were a part of, I mean, American Gothic, Jack and Jill, Deadwood, you name it, which would you say taught you the most where you find yourself applying, you know, actionable lessons to the stuff that you're working on now?
On Jack and Jill, I met my best friend, Amanda Peet, who has both my life and my working life been the person I tend to go to the most for an assessment of what I'm doing or not doing. She's the person I'll go read something with before I decide what I'm going to do. She does the same with me. Our lens is exactly the same. So we tend to respond to the same music or book or poet, anything. And we also tend to reject the same kinds of things. So if she thinks what I'm doing is good, I tend to feel confident and can go forth into the night and vice versa. And so that experience that was not necessarily the working experience, although I had that with her doing the show, but it was a very, formative, you know, I was 24, and you know, she's been my best friend ever since. And I rely on her totally for her, both her expertise and her, insight, and her empathy and just her total human self to help me, assess things. And I think she relies on the same for me. And so that has been a big, huge, huge, huge part of the way I work and the choices I make also.
I love hearing about relationships like that. I usually save this for later in the show, but it feels like a good transition right now. One of my favorite Collateral Ladies Night questions to ask is a big one. Who is a female filmmaker out there that you think is changing the industry for the better?
Ava DuVernay. I think she's an extraordinary, I mean, When They See Us to me was beyond just the potency of the subject matter. It was what she did visually was this impossible straddling of insisting that you look at it and all, the beauty of the shot, and also being completely, it completely dissolves and all you're doing is focusing on the story. It was such a bizarre feat, I thought. And just, I don't know. And I just am begging at her feet to find some opportunity to work with her. I think she's so special and sort of refusing to be unseen, you know?
Oh, well, I absolutely love that. I always think she has a wonderful answer to that question, and not the first time I've heard that answer, which I think speaks to just her presence and the influence that she has. Yeah. Back to your filmography here. Let's go with Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. I'm curious about your experience on that one, because the hype on that was just through the roof. I think it broke records for like licensing fees and things like that. So what was your experience managing the expectations for being part of Aaron Sorkin's first big show after West Wing?
What I can say is that that was my first, I mean, I had done Jack and Jill. I had done, God, had I done Deadwood? No?
Possibly. If I have the list right in my head, possibly.
I think it's possible. I don't remember. This is a real tragedy for me more than you, because it's my actual life.
It's because you've done so many great things. You can't keep them all straight. It makes sense.
But I remember, you know, I had done Glass Menagerie in New York with Jessica Lange. We had done it on Broadway. It was not well received. But of course, my relationship with Jessica Lange is such a through line through, you know, it's sort of why I'm sitting here talking to you today. And that's the actual truth. But I wasn't getting any work. And I knew also the other thing is on Studio 60, this has happened to me. It happened to me on Game Change and it happened to me on Studio 60. I got these jobs because of the wives of the men directing them, because they were watching all the tapes and it was their wives who were like, it's that one. And they were like, really? I wasn't sure. I was thinking maybe the other one, you know, it's gotten down to me and another girl on both of those projects. And both Jay Roach's wife and Tommy Shalami's wife were like the Sarah girl. And I just think that is, I'm not saying that they were anti-me, the men, but they were conflicted. And the women in their lives were like, there's not a conversation to be had here. This is what you got to do. And I always thought that was sort of interesting. These two big sort of seminal moments for me, that getting Studio 60 was a big deal. It was the hottest thing in town. And as you said, the licensing fees alone, and he's coming off the wild success of The West Wing, Matthew Perry coming off Friends has just ended and it's his first. It was a really, really, really big deal. And a lot of actresses wanted this part. And I was coming off, as I said, a time of really not working. So I just didn't. And it was Amanda who insisted that they see me, because Amanda was also already cast. And I had originally gone, I think I'd actually gone in for her part before, while she was still being, and they said, per Amanda's suggestion, will you come in for Harriet Hayes? And I don't think I was high on the list. I think ultimately what happened is my final audition, I was told you had to come with characters prepared, like skits and characters. So I brought my bobby pins to do my Juliette Lewis impression. I brought my thing to do my this impression. I did them. Whereas I think the other girl that it came down to us did not do that. So I think maybe I had that added element, but from what I've understood, and who knows if it's been embellished or memory is a funny thing. But I was told that it was Christine Lottie who was saying to Tommy, like, this is, so I did, in terms of managing my expectation, it was a hard fought job to get. And then, you know, I remember being in my trailer thinking like, oh, so I should probably buy a house because I'm probably going to be in LA for a while. I'd just been in New York and I was like, I'm probably going to have to stay here. This thing's going to run for 6 or 7 years. And, you know, so it was definitely, and I think we all thought that there were too many, you know, too many of the moving parts were all these anointed, celebrated. But look, at the end of the day, I got to do Aaron Sorkin speak. I got to have his dialogue, like, live in my mouth and come out of it. Like, it just, it's, that's something that nobody can take away, no matter what, you know?
And eventually you did get your epic run with a show on American Horror Story, which
is one of my absolute favorite shows in existence. It just speaks to all my sensibilities, and I love how you guys just go for it every single time. From my perspective, that felt like a game changer. Did it feel like that for you as well?
Yes, it was again, I was in a pocket of time where I had not been working, and it was then something happened, and I got Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, Game Change, and American Horror Story, 12 Years a Slave, all at the same time.
Yes.
Nothing was coming my way. And then all of a sudden, it just sort of, I did Martha, Marcy, I went to Sundance. That movie got a lot of attention, obviously. It was, you know, Sean Durkin is, I can't wait to see The Nest. I'm already just like, I mean, are you not
good? We had Carrie Coon on the show for The Nest, and she's wonderful, and she's so good in it.
Oh, I mean, I just cannot wait. I love her, and I love Sean Durkin. I think he is. And the fact that we've had to wait this long for another movie since Martha, Marcy, it's like, dude, come on, I need this now. But yeah, and I just, I remember I came back, I did a pilot that didn't get picked up. I got Game Change. I left to go do Game Change. I got American Horror Story because of Jessica Lange, and then 12 Years a Slave, and that all happened at the same time. And then subsequently, they were all coming out at the same time. And I got nominated for Game Change, and then nominated for American Horror Story the following year. And then it just sort of has never really, hey.
Oh, dog. Who is that?
Are you barking and you want to play? Oh my goodness.
This is a very animal friendly show.
Would you like to come see
Perry? Oh my.
Winnie?
What is his or her name?
This is Winnie.
Oh, Winnie, you are beautiful.
Are you the prettiest little dog?
Oh, I can match this. Oh, Winnie, meet Deputy Dewey.
Winnie, it's a cat. Oh,
oh no.
Winnie, it's a cat.
He's like so unhappy right now.
It's a CAT. She runs up. No, it's not outside. It was on the... Poor dog is like...
And I just disturbed Dewey from his loaf, but it was worth it.
Sorry, Dewey.
All right.
I can't remember what the hell I was saying.
We were talking about American Horror Story.
Yeah, it absolutely changed my life. There's no question about it. No.
I love that. Actually, kind of to follow up on that a little bit, when you think about it, do you credit the popularity of American Horror Story with changing everything, or your collaboration with Ryan Murphy? Because what you two went on to do together, I still can't wrap my mind around it.
Yeah, it's a very unique collaboration. It's hard for me to separate the chicken and egg of popularity mixed with my relationship with Ryan, or Ryan's trust in me, or whatever. I mean, I still to this day don't understand why he was like, I'll let you play Lana Winters. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know if he was just like, wait, what? I had like three scenes first season. Now you're going to, what? You're going to give me that part? Okay. It was really an extraordinary communication of his trust in me. And that was something that I think ultimately was something that was sort of lacking in my working experience, was that feeling of feeling really seen in somebody really saying, I know you can do this. And so I'm saying you're doing it, and now you've just got to do it. And he just continues to do this to me time and time and time and time and time and time and time again. And I am exceedingly grateful for it, but it's terrifying every time. I mean, I'm 3 days into Linda Tripp, and it's really scary.
It sounds like a scary that's probably worth it, though, especially given your track record together.
Well, I mean, I think the scripts are very special. I really do. And it's a huge stretch for me as an actor. And that is thrilling, thrilling to me. And to find myself at 45, almost 46 years old, being given a part that, like, you know, in terms of the complexity and, you know, there is nothing about this woman that is... what's the right word? She's complicated. And it's not like a Marcia Clark situation where you ultimately have to confront your feeling of how wrong we were, you know. Not that you won't feel some of that for Linda when you have a little bit of a context for what was her life was. But again, we don't have to talk about that. I was just thinking about, anyway, sorry.
I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
I have another like big broad question for you, because I will never forget being on the set of Run and getting to watch you work and just to see how kind of like in tune you were with every single element of the production. And also you've directed a great episode of American Horror Story. So at what point in your acting career did you realize that you had not only just like an interest, but a knack for all elements of production.
I think what you're actually describing is a person who's a real bossy boots and who has a real, I mean, ask anybody in my life to whom I'm very close. I am very opinionated and I have lots of ideas about how you should do what you're doing. And it's something I'm working on. So I think that sort of lent itself to this idea. Look, when it comes to the directing thing, being on American Horror Story, this is something that Evan Peters and I have talked about before, where we've been there from the beginning, and obviously he in a much more significant way in that first season than I was, but essentially it's been the two of us consistently for the bulk of the series, save for the most recent one, that we're both coming back for next year. But you get so well-versed in the machine of it. With American Horror Story, we're always arguably trying to meet air dates. By the time we start shooting and the scripts and the air dates, we are always shooting the hours on that show. I have friends who are like, all of whom are actors, who are like, why are you at work at 6 a.m? You got there at 5. It's too much. What's the deal? And it's like, I think we're always trying to meet air dates. The scripts are incredibly ambitious. We're trying to give everybody everything they want. And I think at the end of the day, like, nobody is more expert about the world than the people who are there helping to make happen, from the crew to the actors to everybody. So it was an easy jump for me in that world to go to that position, because it was a crew I'd worked with for so many years. It's a genre I think I understand now, having been part of it for so long. But I had a lot of help. I had so much support. You know, Ryan even came and sat behind me on the monitor on my second day of shooting, and was just very moving to me that he did that. And he had told me that I was not going to have any special effects. He's like, it's just going to be the episode I'm going to have you do. It's an episode where it's just Jessica's going to come back. I was supposed to do episode 8. And then he's like, I want you to do episode 6 because it's a return to Murder House. It'll be all the things, just a bunch of actors sitting around talking. That's going to be great for you. And I was like, okay. Cut to my second day of shooting. I had to have Dylan thrown across the wall, thrown across the room, hitting the wall. Somebody disintegrates and evaporates into fire. There's a stabbing. And he came to work on that day and he's like, oh, oops. I don't think I was like, Ryan, like, this is so crazy. You told me it was just going to be me and Jessica. What's happened? But that's just like him. You know, he throws at you just a little bit more than you can chew.
I love that. Kind of leaning into Run a little here with that one, because we're also talking on set about how it was a unique experience for you to work with Sev, Natalie, and Anish as a team. So when you're in a situation like that and you're experiencing something new, when do you kind of figure out the divide between this is something new and exciting and I should adapt to this new process versus this doesn't feel right to me and I need to speak up now?
It's always here, you know. So Anish told me from the jump that he works with them, with Sevenat, and that sometimes I'll see them conferring behind the monitor and they're all sort of weighing in. And he said he may come up and give me a note that was one of their notes, and that is what. So none of it was a surprise to me, but it absolutely was an unorthodox way of working, not in a way that's, I don't mean it pejoratively. I'm just saying I know there are people who co-direct, but I'd never seen a director work with two producers. First, it was unnerving for me. It was, because it was like, I want to answer to one person. You know, I don't want to feel like directing by committee feels a little uncomfortable for me, but you know, I thought, I'm here. I loved that. I loved Anisha's first movie. I really did. I thought it was so inventive and smart and nail-bitey and emotional. And I thought, how did he do that without ever doing anything in its traditional way and sort of challenging the way we watched a movie? And I was watching the whole movie, like trying to be like, put the camera on the, you know, which kind of was a really interactive experience, which I loved, you know. So I thought, this works for them, and the end product was something that really resonated with me, so I can't resist it. I've said yes. I knew this is what it was going to be, so go with it. And the minute I allowed that to happen, I ended up having a really wonderful time with that component of it. And the main thing with Anish that was so wonderful, and with Kira as well, is that I was working with two people who were just relatively new to, you know, Anish had made a movie, but Kira had never been a lead. She's the lead of Run, you know.
She's so good.
And she is so good. And I keep saying this to her, and I don't know if she believes me or not, but I just would marvel at her on the set, because I kept thinking, I would no more have the comportment. I would no more at that age carrying the weight of this, of a, you know, at that time it was just a Lionsgate release. It was a studio movie. Like, how in the world is she managing this so well and going to these places, emotional places? And, you know, it just, it was a real feat. And I thought it was so impressive. And I thought it was equally impressive that Anish fought the battle that he did to have Kira play the part. And then he didn't want, you know, one of the, you know, newly anointed, freshly minted new things on the scene. He wanted an actress and he that had not been seen before. He wanted authenticity in terms of a wheelchair user. He wanted it to be as real as possible. And I thought that was bold and that was brave. And that was a person who was always going to come to me with every single thing he wanted, needed, or thought should be happening with real thought and consideration and care. And a person who was not afraid to swing big. And I thought, I want to work with people like that. And, you know, I get to say I was there when Kira Allen became Kira Allen, you know.
I think one of the greatest joys of finally getting to see the movie when it was finished was the fact that she just blew me away. She really is something else.
Really something else. And she, I'm sure you spoke to her a little bit too. She's a really, really special, sensitive, and so smart. And, you know, she has wonderful parents and she's a wonderful young woman. And I know that we are just getting the first little bits of Kira.
I fully believe that as well.
Yeah, I do.
Going back to working with Anish, because yeah, I know for this movie, he was channeling Hitchcock and also M. Night Shyamalan. So I'm curious what it was like for you to have gone from working with M. Night to the set of Run, where someone's trying to channel the M. Night style.
Funny, because I was actually leaving to go do press for Glass on one weekend that they had given me off to go do that. I left Winnipeg to fly to New York to do the press. I was going to see Night. And, you know, Anish was just so cute because he gets a little nerdy around the Night stuff, where he's just like, so what are you going to, what kind of press are you doing? What are you doing? And so you're going to be with him. Oh, cool, cool. Yeah. This shot that I actually did is actually an homage to, and he was so, respectful. And I have to say, like, I love a fan who's also a creative person, you know, who's a creator and who's self-generating all this stuff, who has no problem celebrating the miracle work of the people that have come before him, you know. And I don't know, I just love that. And partly because when I see an actor that I've admired my whole life and I'm in a room with them, I don't know how to be like, hey, what's up? No, it's very nice to meet you. Very nice to meet you too. I'm like, hi, I'm Sarah, and I love you so much. Like, I don't know how to not do it. So I really bonded with Anish over his love for Night. And, you know, I have so much love for Night. He taught me a lot about myself. He's a really soulful man. I really hope to work with him again. I would like another shot at not being so panicked. I was really panicked when I was working with, because it was, you know, it's a real thing to come into an environment that is where there's well-established connection between both Bruce and Samuel L. Jackson and James McAvoy. Like, there was and Anna. It's a real thing. And so I was nervous. I was nervous and didn't want to disappoint him. And so I would like an opportunity to try it again. And now that I know him, not be so panicked.
I would love to see that happen. As we wind down here, I do have one spoiler question for you on Run. So I'm going to put up the spoiler flag right now for anyone who hasn't seen the movie. So my question is, do you think that this selfishness that Diane has was specifically sparked by her losing her biological child? Or if that baby had been okay, do you think that Diane still would have had some of the traits that we see on display in Run?
100%. Diane was a victim of terrible abuse and neglect by her own mother. And I think in a somewhat twisted but initially valiant and probably somewhat pure effort to do the very thing that was never done for her, which was to give the utmost care and attention to her child. And she just took it to a place where something else took over, and it may have accelerated. And certainly her needing to get as far away from her needing to live in some kind of seclusion and all the secrecy that is connected to having taken a child that was not hers biologically. But what she did to Chloe, I think she would have done if the child had been hers.
That was what I was thinking.
Okay, real good.
We always end Ladies Night with some random questions, questions that I think of on the spot. So I will give you, if you could learn more about one job on a film set, what would it be and why?
Probably the lens. So I know a little bit about the, if you say you're on a 50, you say you're on a whatever, but I would like to learn more about what it means. And also, here's what I would like to learn. I would like to understand how a script supervisor does what they do. It is literally, I look at them and they've the notes and the margins and the rulers and the things, and I'm a person who, I really like my stuff all. So I would like to know, because I have a little bit of a dyslexia. Like when I look at the camera, I'm like, so it's on her left. Is that her left? Is that my right? Is that my, so I would like to get a little bit of a lay of the land of how they do all that whilst also thinking about anything else that they're thinking about.
It's an unsung hero of a film crew right there.
Unsung hero of a film crew. And also I would like to apologize for all, on behalf of all actors everywhere to every supervisor when they're told they did something with one hand and the actor insists they did it with the other hand. And the script supervisor is like, I'm telling you, and you argue very, very valiantly that you did not do that. And then they show you the frame and then you go, oh, I'm sorry. That's just poor script supervisors everywhere have to deal with this.
How about, what is the weirdest thing you've ever had to learn for a role?
The weirdest thing I've ever had to learn for a role. Oh, I'm sure it was, it's not so weird, but it was the, in Coven when we all had to learn the spell. That was something that we all kept laughing. Also everyone, the voice memo that they sent for us to learn the Latin was this woman was speaking, and we still make a joke about it now. Those of us who were there were, the woman who taped it would do the Latin in different speeds. And then at that very end, she'd be like, and slower now. And then she would do it very slowly so that we could pick up every little consonant. And so now sometimes we just all look at each other and go, slower now. It's really fun. That was a weird thing to learn, where we were all at night going, wait, how do you pronounce this? And what is this? And then you work with Franny Conroy, who just knows what the Latin is already.
Of course. My last one for you. I always end on this one. I like it. It's a deep question. You can either go light with it or deep. Your preference is totally fine here. What is the biggest fear that you've ever had that you've actually managed to overcome?
Biggest fear. What if I haven't overcome any of them?
I kind of don't believe that's true.
Well,
or at least maybe not fully, but I'd like to bet you've made progress on something.
I don't think you're right. I haven't made progress on it. I have a terrible fear of public speaking. I hate to speak in public. It makes me so nervous. I get my heart starts racing. My palms are sweating. I hate it. 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 But I have had to do it. So I wouldn't say I've overcome it, but I've been forced to do it and have done it.
Anytime I've seen you do it, you've done it well. And I will also add that I've seen what you've been doing. I mean, maybe not public speaking in the traditional sense, but on your Instagram with your fans and your followers, and you are just giving them exactly what they want in the moment. And I appreciate you taking the time to do things like that, because the community is important right now.
Yeah. I feel like we're all just sort of so isolated, and it's just, I don't know, that they're the reason that people keep asking me to show up on a set. It's because they're interested in seeing me do something, and that has to be celebrated and accounted for.
Seeing some of those videos just make my heart want to burst. I have to let you go. I'm going to get kicked out of this room. So thank you for your time today. And for everybody out there, Run on Hulu, November 20th. Seriously, really do not miss it. See you guys soon with more Ladies Night.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.